to entertain you. We'll sing your songs.
Hey there. Are you obsessed with things that happened before your time? Well, if you are, join me, the host of Before My Time, Gelsey Lorie, to discuss the wonders of the yesteryears that we weren't around to enjoy ourselves. You can find us on all podcast platforms.
Soon you'll be swaying, so come on, sing along.
Hey, welcome to Unstable Topics, a fast-paced, jam-packed, unhinged bestie podcast filled with facts, reacts, and made-up games in between.
We're your hosts, Sarah
and Maggie,
and we're excited for you to join our best friend hangout, where we surprise one another with things we find interesting or hilarious just to see how the other will react.
Our friendship might be totally stable, but you never know what your bestie might throw your way to knock you off your game.
So come shake things up, learn something new, and laugh along with us. This is Unstable Topics.
Everybody, and holy shit, 450 episodes. Let's not even bury the lead here.
No.
We did it. We did. Everyone knows that the goal of every podcast is to hit 450 episodes.
Yes.
Man,
yes,
what do we get? What are we
the
doing?
Odd
to celebrate?
Number of 9 years.
Yes.
Of doing this
yes.
show. Which is not even nine years. It's like 8 years and 10.5 months.
Yeah.
Because we do 2 episodes a year extra because we do 52 episodes. So
yep.
And I've not missed an episode. It's incredible. It's an incredible feat of mine.
Matt and Kyle are literally 100%ing this mm-hmm. podcast, and I am 99%ing this podcast because I missed when we did
one
Nightmare
creature feature
on
weekend.
Elm Street 5, right? It was 5?
Yeah. Yeah.
It was 5.
Dream child. So
you're my dream child, Scott.
So
sorry, Hunter.
We always try to pick something that is either part of like constant conversation. Like episode 50, we did Sleepaway Camp because we had referenced it so much. Episode 100, we did Monster Squad because it was like such a formative movie. And then it kind of was like a lot of that. Gremlins 2. Like it was like either things that had come up a lot over the last year reference wise or something that was a formulative movie in our horror journey. And this one, I always felt like we would eventually do a Ghostbusters episode, but obviously this is also coming out right as the newest Ghostbusters movie, Frozen Empire, is coming out. So it felt like the perfect time to dive into this one.
Matt's all about that SEO.
I am all about that SEO, but I also, I mean, this was similar to Beetlejuice, a movie that I just burnt that tape up with how much I was popping it into my VCR. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. which is funny because I think the copy that I had of Ghostbusters was taped off of television. I know that it was. It was taped off of television.
Mine was
which means that the blowjob scene was not in the version that I saw for years. Like,
that was the first time I saw
you're
it.
The one who told me about it.
Yeah.
Like,
well,
literally,
that's because I finally
we
bought
were podcasting
the DVD and I was like, what the hell?
Yeah, we were podcasting as Reddit Horror Club, and we were talking about ghost sex, and you were like, oh, you mean like that the blowjob scene in Ghostbusters? Like, what? And you had to explain it to me. So yeah, that and Prophecy, the sleeping bag death, are very like beginning of our friendship. You know, that's the way that you harangued me into this for 10 God. Years, 11,
I
think. I think we did
I
it
love
for two
the
years.
Foundation.
Yeah,
I love the foundation.
It's a very
that y'all
gooey
have built.
Foundation.
Kyle looks like he's making a move to open up a can of
something. No, so I was just trying to hug my background of Sigourney Weaver, but I went the wrong way.
Well, Kyle, are you thirsty? Because I'm thirsty.
I'm parched.
Why don't you?
Yeah, let's celebrate. Let's get some drinks.
So, I mean, there was no Ecto Cooler High C that I could track down anymore. I had a Stay Puffed Marshmallow beer at some point in time. That's no longer here. But listen, I forgot how crazy this movie does get. So I just got Ransacked the Universe from Collective Arts, because that's literally what the EPA dude is trying to do. And these ghosts are just like, yep, okay, here we go. We're going to ransack the universe. So and all the Collective Arts cans are always different. So I just picked this really trippy one for all right.
Yeah, and that's what Zool would like. I wanted something green, and so I just on a whim, I didn't even know it was green when I bought it. I did an Instacart from Aldi's, and or Aldi, I don't know if it has an Aldi's.
It's Aldi, but it's Aldi. We always say Aldi's. Yeah, it's Aldi's.
Aldi's nuts.
Aldi's nuts. Damn it!
Anyway, this ginger beer, I was just like, oh, I'll just get some ginger beer, and it came in this bright green bottle, and it's green, and I was like, I can't find Ecto Cooler, so this is.
That's beautiful.
Also, isn't this movie kind of like kids playing at adulthood when you watch it? You know, so like ginger beer is the closest you get to actual beer until you're 14 years old, and your older brother's best friend's girlfriend's older brother brings a six pack of shitty beer over on a Saturday night when you're watching Ghostbusters, and you drink some and then you throw up.
Was his name Daryl?
You too.
You too.
So let's start with this point, because I'm realizing more and more when we do this podcast that it's not safe to assume anything now that Kyle's here, but I'm assuming that this is none of our first watches, correct?
No.
Okay.
That's a fair question, because I think that maybe it is my second, like, all the way through watch. And I also do think that I had it taped on, and I didn't have it taped. My cousins did, or we would catch it when it was on TV and not have a tape. So Ghostbusters is, which I'm glad you brought this up, Matt, because I would love to hear what sort of everybody's like involvement in Ghostbusters is. It's such a big.
Well, I was one of the writers.
Okay, cool. Wait, Harold? I was just sitting and watching and being like, so many people fucking love Ghostbusters, and I am. It's not that I didn't like it. I actually thought this was very fun, but like, I'm not a fan. Like a Ghostbusters fan, so I'd love to like know more about everybody else's interest. You're not part of the Ohio Ghostbusters League or whatever.
No,
Scott,
I'm not. I am not. But I have a friend. I mean, he's more of an acquaintance, really. He's in it, and I think we know some people that do the.
There's some Philly Ghostbusters people who listen
Philly,
to the show too. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah,
maybe that's what it was. Maybe it wasn't Ohio.
When we
maybe
did RetroCon,
they're all over. They're all over. Yeah, there's a documentary called Ghost Heads about that entire movement of people do Ghostbusters.
I'll take them over the groups of dudes who dress up as stormtroopers any day, because it doesn't make sense to me. You know,
well, I'll take both of those groups over Deadpool cosplayers who act like dressing up like Deadpool is just like a free pass to be a douchebag for an entire weekend at a convention. Yeah. Like, no,
that's why we don't
do
comic cons. We do horror cons. We would rather deal with our own type of weird instead of comic book guy.
Yeah, I certainly don't have anything against the people dressing up as Ghostbusters. I'm just like, oh no, that you really like it.
I think that at least I understood what you were trying to say, and Matt understood, but I think that it's in 2024's absolute media literacy Armageddon, it is sometimes very important for us to beat the listener over the head with what we mean, because we can't be out here criticizing people that we don't mean to be. But
especially Ghostbusters.
Here's what I'm going to explain makes you feel the good. Bubble. The bubble that I see it as, and I am going to dunk on Deadpool people for just one more second. But like...
Who hurt you?
But all it takes to cosplay as Deadpool is to just literally buy a Deadpool costume from anywhere on the internet and call it a day. what I think is always impressive about the people who are really, really into Star Wars, or like really into Ghostbusters, or really into any of these fandoms and they want to celebrate it, is that there is this very creative aspect of them where it's like they are literally building remote control R2 units that they can ride around a convention. Mm-hmm. Like, or like with the Ghostbusters stuff, I remember we did a charity event when I was doing Chords for a Cure where the Ghostbusters were there and they brought their Ecto-1 and they brought, like, they literally spend the time to build homemade, like, ghost traps and, like, and there's just, like, a creative nature to it of, like, they're really, like, invested in this. And
it does seem like it's a personalization thing, too. It's like they get to be a Ghostbuster. They're not necessarily cosplaying as, like, the Ghostbusters.
And I think that's what made the game fun. They finally released the Ghostbusters video game, I want to say it was 10 or 15 years ago. That was the fun of it, was you weren't playing as Ray or Peter or Winston. Like, you were creating a Ghostbuster in your own image who is being hired by the Ghostbusters to join the team.
God.
Right?
You were a subcontractor.
They took the Tony Hawk's underground version of this and just, like, created it. I love that.
But I think what it comes down to is the script for Ghostbusters is kind of the big thing that makes people really love this movie. Mm-hmm. Not that anybody has read the script, but if you've heard the story of Dan Aykroyd's script for Ghostbusters, it was like 300 something pages of in detail breakdowns of, like, how ghosts exist, why they exist, the science between the machines. And then basically Harold Ramis's job was to take all of that and rein it into, like, something that they could film. Mm. But that's because, like, Dan Aykroyd really believes in this stuff. He believes in everything that he's writing about. And I think that that's what makes this movie work, is, like, it is a very funny, very smart comedy that you can tell isn't just, like, someone decided to be fun to make a comedy about ghosts. Like, it's coming from someone who, like, really has this strong care for all of us. And that's why I think some of the best scenes are, like, when I was a kid, I hated this scene. Now, I love the scene where Ray and Winston are in the car just having a conversation about Revelation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, like, what does this mean? And is this the reason? Like, there are these, like, deeper psychological and, like existential conversations in this movie that I think Dan Aykroyd was working through while writing this script. So I think that's why people connect to it so much. But then also, to answer your question on my relationship with it, there was a cartoon, and then I watched the movie, and the librarian at the start of the movie scared the ever living shit out of me.
Yep.
And I was hooked for life.
Like, destroyed me. I was so too scared to watch it. You know, like, I didn't care about Slimer. I didn't care about any, like, Slimer. Is that what
it's like?
Slimer,
this weird, like, it's like she's got, like, a gorilla face suddenly.
Yeah.
It is so freaky and weird.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and the thing about, I don't know if I've said this about a lot of movies that we've done on our, you know, big anniversaries, but I definitely feel this way about Ghostbusters, maybe Ghostbusters 2 as well, and definitely Gremlins, maybe Gremlins 2 as well. But Ghostbusters might be the one that kind of takes the cake, because it's very gooey. It's very, like, the practical effects are so good, and I just feel like when I watch Ghostbusters, even when I think about the ghosts in it, the memorable ghosts and, like, all the really titular scenes, or not titular, but, like, the most important scenes, it gives me this almost full body memory, like this sensation of kind of, like, it's also the way that I felt when I would look at VHS boxes at the grocery store when I was too scared to watch. I mean,
to
I was,
rent the
you know,
movie,
I was like probably like 8 years old. You know, I didn't know any. I was not actually going to be watching any horror movies, but, like,
I
look at them and
I know what you're saying, because I debate if Puppet Master is that good of a movie or if that box just mesmerized me so much as a child that it, like, it will always have, like, a heart, like, a place in my heart. Even though I think the sequels are better, I'm always like, yeah, but Puppet Master, man, that box.
Yeah, exactly. Like, but it's this weird. It's almost like, you know, when you have poison ivy and you scratch around it.
Yeah.
And you know you're not supposed to, but you're, like, scratching around it. It feels almost like that, but your entire body. I don't know how else to explain that feeling for me, but the librarian 100% does that for me. And also the cabbie Those two.
I literally wrote down Skeleton Cabbie.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. The Skeleton Cabbie is the best.
This is another one of those movies, though, where also I have to say, like, there are almost no special effects that feel outdated to me. You know what I mean? Like, you know how, like, sometimes you, like, watch these movies and you're like, oh, I can kind of see, like, you can, like, see the strings or whatever. As, yeah. You know, mm-hmm. not the literal strings, but you can see. Like, some of these, I'm just like, man, like, even when I watch the behind the scenes on how they did some of this stuff, I'm still like, God damn, that's an impressive look.
This was Industrial Light and Magic, right?
Yeah, I think so.
I mean,
yeah.
When Sigourney Weaver comes up off the bed in that Exorcist thing and then rolls, yeah. I was just like, oh my, like I was taken aback. I looked like, I don't do it a lot, but maybe I should, but like I was looking it up. I was like, how did that even happen? You know? And that was, one of the more mild ones. I think maybe I don't love when the Zool, when the dog, Zool. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, no, Zool, are you talking about the hellhound?
The hound when he runs out of
the... Oh, yeah, that is... That, okay,
I don't
yes,
love
that.
The green screen
that
is obvious,
aged.
But that's about it.
But that's also, like, you know what? Like, that's because that's the technology. Like, that's the tech being the obstacle. Everything else that's practical and fun and interesting works. Like, everything else works so well. And I was not convinced I was going to, like... enjoy it the first 20 minutes that I was watching it. I was like, this is gonna suck if I have to go onto this podcast and be like,
talk Ghostbusters.
I didn't love Ghostbusters. but it does make me want, I mean, it does still make me wonder, especially when the new ones, and there's so much backlash on the new, or I mean, there was when we had an all-female Ghostbusters. Like,
now I liked that one. I've talked about it before, but I liked it. I didn't love it, but I liked it.
And I didn't, but not because of the cast. I just thought that the script could have
right. No, I used some. Here's the thing: is I think that the first two acts are really great, but then they kind of didn't know how to make it feel like Ghostbusters, and so they had to have this cataclysmic thing, and they just tossed a bunch of CGI at the screen, and it just was not fun. But like the first two acts, super super fun. If they would have kept the scope a little bit smaller, I think it would have been fine.
And don't get me wrong, I also sing a ton of praises for Afterlife while also simultaneously recognizing that that movie is exactly the same as how I feel about The Force Awakens, where it's like, wow, you really are just like following the script of New Hope beat for beat. Mm-hmm. Like as fun as Afterlife is, and I will never be disappointed watching Paul Rudd do stuff, I was like, wow, you're literally just doing Gozer again.
I haven't seen it. So you're spoiling it for me, Matt.
Well, sorry, but
I think it's been out for like 6 years. I think we're okay.
It's been out for a bit. There are some like emotionally beautiful moments in Afterlife that are nice to witness. But yes, the spoiler alert for Afterlife, if you haven't seen it yet, there is literally a point where Paul Rudd and the two kids' mom are possessed by demon dogs and go to Gozer as the keymaster and the gatekeeper. And I'm like, all right, so we're back to the well. Now, I don't think when I'm watching the trailers for Frozen Empire, I'm not going, oh, man, they're doing Ghostbusters 2 all over again. Like, it does feel like it's kind of its own unique story.
It's supposed to be more like the TV show, right?
Yeah, that's what it seems
like. As far as I've read, and it's been maybe a year since I read anything about it, but my understanding was that they were aiming for doing a lot of stuff that was more akin to the vibe of the TV show. And I think that Frozen Empire might have been a story arc on the cartoon.
It's
I'm not
possible.
Positive.
But I mean, I also understand, like, okay, if you're trying to introduce Ghostbusters to a new generation, I get the idea of doing this soft reboot, essentially, of like, we're telling you a new story and it's still in line with, like, this is still technically a sequel to the first two movies, but because there's probably a lot of children who've never seen those first two movies, here we're also going to try to give you the Cliff Notes version of that first movie, so you have it as a reference point for whatever we do beyond this point as like a future thing.
Doesn't sound anything like another movie that's coming out this summer that starts with a C and ends with a row. doesn't sound anything like that strategy. And people aren't mad about that either at all.
Definitely
so,
not.
Listen, you should be fine.
I'm just throwing this out there, guys. I was debating this. Mm-hmm. we're talking about how much Homeboy loves SEO with us talking about Ghostbusters this week and talking about a different movie next week. Do we watch one of the shitty Crow sequels the week that
yeah.
the new Crow movie comes
no.
out?
Yeah.
No. The answer is yes.
We watched the original Crow.
Okay.
Yes, the City of Angels one.
Yeah, Wicked Prayer, dude.
Dude, the Wicked Prayer. I am so interested in the Wicked Prayer. Never seen it, but you're telling me there's a Crow movie where Edward Furlong is the Crow, and I'm kind of like, there's no way that isn't so bad that it becomes comedically.
No, laughable. I didn't realize y'all haven't done the original on the show.
No, we've never.
We haven't done any Crow movies. I don't the Crow franchise, so I've only seen the first one.
No, I don't either. I like the Crow soundtrack franchise.
Yeah, you do.
Big fan.
See, if you're talking about SEO, like that's where the SEO is. We do a Crow movie, we do a Crow soundtracking, and they coincide with the new Crow coming out.
I have the Crow soundtracking on my like Patreon shortlist.
Yeah,
so.
We gotta get
shit.
Yeah,
there we are.
Okay, well, everybody, stop what you're doing. Let's go watch the Crow.
We're here to entertain you. We'll sing your songs.
Hey there. Are you obsessed with things that happened before your time? Well, if you are, join me, the host of Before My Time, Gelsey Laurie, to discuss the wonders of the yesteryears that we weren't around to enjoy ourselves. You can find us on all podcast platforms.
Soon you'll be swaying, so come on, sing along.
Hey, welcome to Unstable Topics, a fast-paced, jam-packed, unhinged bestie podcast filled with facts, reacts, and made-up games in between.
We're your hosts, Sarah
and Maggie,
and we're excited for you to join our best friend hangout, where we surprise one another with things we find interesting or hilarious just to see how the other will react.
Our friendship might be totally stable, but you never know what your bestie might throw your way to knock you off your game.
So come shake things up, learn something new, and laugh along with us. This is Unstable Topics.
You've been lost in the woods for hours now, stumbling around in the dark. You come around the bend and see two people roasting marshmallows over a roaring fire. They see you coming into the clearing and gesture over to pull up a log. Welcome to Campfire Ashes. I'm Paul.
And I'm Jess. Join us as we tell each other our originally written spooky stories around the campfire and then dive into the lore and legends that inspired them. Is it something that goes bump in the night? Is it something menacing lurking past the tree line? Or is it just weird and otherworldly? You'll find it here on Campfire Ashes.
You can find us on Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, or right here on the Geekscape Network.
I want to start with the beginning of this movie real quick, because I do think that this movie, literally all the way up to the librarian ghost, to me is like such a fantastic opening to this movie. Like between the librarian going through the library and like you just seeing like random creepy stuff happening behind her. She screams. You can skip the Peter Venkman. Like I enjoy that gag, but it's whatever. But then them checking everything out, like the books stacked up to the ceiling and the slime over, like it's just so well done.
And also all the goo on the card catalog, also the card catalog exploding, like that really did a number on my brain as a kid, because like Gen Z probably never had card catalogs. I'm pretty sure everything was digitized by the time they were in elementary school.
But my entire childhood, I looked at those and would think about it.
Yeah.
Every time I looked at the card catalog.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I wrote down two quotes from this movie that are quotes that I never thought about as a child, but I use way more as an adult for no apparent reason. And the one quote is when they're looking at the firehouse to decide if they want to buy it. And Ray comes sliding down the pole, and he's like so enthusiastic about the place. He just goes, "You gotta try this pole!" Like, I don't know why that line now sits in my brain all the time, but I think it's so funny and childlike. And then the other one, you may or may not have heard me reference this at conventions very often when it's the end of the show and I'm ready to pack up. Even if no one else is around me, I'll look at the table and just go, shut this down. Shut this all down. And then
I start it's funnier that you do it alone. That's what I really love.
Yes, 100%. I almost don't want to break down anything with you just so you have that moment to say that alone.
But lead singer over here doesn't want to break down anything to help Matt the drummer.
But like literally just the perfect monotone delivery in which the EPA guy just says that. He's like,
that's Eric Stoltz, isn't it?
I don't think it's Eric Stoltz.
It's not, it's Kmart Eric Stoltz if it's not.
He's great. I love that. I love that whole story. Like, it's not a storyline.
You know what's fucking crazy about that is when you.
I thought it was great.
When you think about this movie as an adult and you think about the fact that the bureaucrats are painted as the bad guys, but they're the ones who are literally trying to stop the city from being blown up by an unlicensed nuclear reactor in the middle of New York City.
Well, that's the thing that's funny, right? Is that, like, he's not wrong.
He's not
wrong. And, like, the flip side is, like, Peter was a total douchebag about answering any questions about anything that they were doing. Like it's one of those things where it's like, I do kind of side on the EPA guy. In that sense, like, yeah, there's a giant nuclear reactor in a basement that no one can explain to anybody, and they're just supposed to be calm, cool, and collected about it.
Yeah.
Oh, no, it's not. It's William Atherton. I don't know, but yeah. It's definitely not Eric Stoltz, but he looks like Eric Stoltz to me.
Yeah, he does. Boy,
he
does.
From here on out.
Also, real quick, I gotta give a little shout out to Megan. For new listeners, that's my wife. I'm married. But she, during her summers during college, she would work at a summer camp for out in California for very affluent children of very affluent people. And so there'd be all these movie stars that would have their kids go out for like 2 weeks at a time during the summer. And some kids, you know, were out there for a month. Some of them were there for the whole 2 months, whatever. One summer, one of Megan's campers was Annie Potts' son, and she stayed in contact with him. And I'm like, okay, listen, if we ever go out to California, we're finding a way to have lunch with Annie Potts.
Yeah.
There's no question, because I fucking love her.
I think that this viewing specifically, I was really like, Janine is the star of this movie. Like, every line that she brings is just like so, whether it's her just like, bold face flirting with Egon and him not getting it whatsoever, or just her complaining about how little money they're paying her to work like 60 hour weeks in the firehouse. Like, it, she is so good in this. And I mean, I gotta shout out my boy Rick Moranis is basically me in middle school and high school, just like no self-awareness, just thinking he's
that's
cooler
called autism,
than he is.
Just FYI.
Yeah, look, I figured it out.
yeah, all those internet quizzes really showed you.
But man, what's the one line where he's talking about the TV and he's like, he was really mad the TV was on really loud, so I turned mine on and turned it up so he thought that maybe it was just a technical issue on our floor.
just taking one for a team that he didn't even know he's not on. Just because you live on the same floor. He's incredible. And he, like, doesn't over Rick Moranis it. You know what I mean? Like, I guess, like, as a kid, I thought he was, like, one character all the time. And he certainly falls into that. Like, don't get me wrong. But watching him do this, I was like, oh, no, you have, like, versions of this thing that you do. And he's fucking hysterical.
Well, and apparently the story that I heard was that they originally wanted John Candy for that role.
Yeah.
And John Candy, like, pitched them an idea where he's like, his idea was that the character was foreign, and that's why he didn't read the signals correctly. So he was going to do it as almost like, oh my god, I can't even think of what the like German ish.
Man, I'm so glad that they didn't go that route because
hashing it out, and then when they explained what they wanted the character to be like, he was like, "You've got the wrong guy." He's like, "You got to hire Rick." And he was the one that was like, Rick's the guy for this role. So he like stepped down and basically gifted this to his friend. And I think Rick hit it out. Like the way that he just, and there's part of me just knowing Rick Moranis' background where I'm like, I have a feeling that half the stuff he says is not in the script and that Rick Moranis just took a lot of time to learn about like tax forms and just riffed. like walking around this party, just like talking to all these people. Because
dude,
on
IMDb,
are so
he's credited as a writer. So
yeah,
like, I don't know enough about it, but the internet tells me that he probably did exactly what you're suggesting.
Yeah, I think he improvised a lot of those scenes because he's considered one of the greatest improv guys of the 80s. But yeah, I mean, that party scene is so funny because he is just
so
like
fun.
Bouncing from person to person, just like every single person at his party is a client and he's just talking to them about their taxes. Like it's so
and they
perfect.
Don't seem to mind.
No.
They seem to be having a lovely time, you know, which is great for them.
And then he's just so funny. Even when he's possessed, he's like still like dorky Rick Moranis. Like it didn't make him cooler to be possessed by this dog. Like,
it made Sigourney Weaver even hotter, but Rick Moranis is still just the doofiest
motherfucker. All of the hot magic went to Sigourney.
Even though I'm sure one of the hands on that couch was trying to squeeze the hotness out of her.
Bro, that is the only part of this movie that gives me the ick. I mean, and it's never not, well, in my adult life. As a kid, I think I registered it a little bit, but as an adult, anytime I've watched it, I've been like, ooh, let's just, you know.
Every time I watch it, part of me hopes, was that like Sigourney Weaver's boyfriend or husband that was like, can I do one of the couch hands? Like,
man,
because the idea that
if
it's
Megan
a
was an
double
actor, I would be like, honey, can I grope you on camera? I'll do it for free.
You guys need hands on set? Hands on set?
Hands on set.
Well, as
then,
I was,
hands
so,
on set and then hands hyphen on set. It's two different things.
That's my IMDb, hands on set.
So,
also, guys, like, who wore it better? The guy that wore the hand that groped Sigourney Weaver in Ghostbusters, or the guy who wore a fake hand as the mauler in My Demon Lover?
That's a toss-up, man.
That's a big toss-up.
Toss-up.
So I was just talking about how John Candy was almost Louis Tully. We should also talk about another almost cast person, which was, of course, that Paul Rubens was almost cast as Gozer at the end of this movie. But they wanted to go with someone who had a way more of an
androgynous.
Thank you, Scott.
Well, here's the funny thing, though, is that I actually have a note. I was like, man, like, I think this was the first NB character I ever.
I
never
was
realized
just about to
that.
Say, Gozer should be celebrated as an early non-binary fictional
character.
Mean,
I think that was the character played by a woman. I didn't even look.
I genuinely don't. They did such a good job of, like, having it be where you're like, I don't know.
The makeup is very, very much a
David Bowie.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. The original cast when Dan Aykroyd started writing this movie was also dramatically different because this was supposed to be, I believe the original intention he wanted was him, Harold Ramis, John Belushi, and Eddie Murphy.
Yes.
And when John Belushi died, he thought, okay, well, now this movie's never going to get made. And then it was years later that he dusted it back off. But John Belushi was supposed to play the Bill Murray role originally. And the joke, before Slimer was called Slimer, they used to say that was John Belushi's role in the movie. They wanted the character to have that similar vibe as his character in Animal House, like this loud, crazy, obnoxious, like eating food maniac type vibe. And then, you know, he became such a big star that at some point the real Ghostbusters turned into Slimer and the real Ghostbusters in later seasons because he was the true star of the show, ultimately. The one other thing that I wrote down, Kyle, I have a feeling you are a bit too young for this to connect, but Scott.
I'm just a little baby.
You're a little bitty baby.
I'm just a little baby.
Little baby man.
One of the things that I thought of when I was watching this movie, specifically the very end, when they kill the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man and all the marshmallow falls on people, was that I had ruined many a Ghostbusters toy smushing them into marshmallows to recreate the ending of this movie as a kid.
You know, I don't think I ever tried that.
Yeah,
like,
I did.
I had the toys, but I also had a Stay Puft Marshmallow Man that I loved very, very much. Damn, how did I never think of that?
Yeah,
I
would just
eat the marshmallows
push a marshmallow
then?
Into the toy. But now they're all smashed in. I did have the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man toy, which I also rubbed
so
marshmallows
fast.
On to smell like marshmallows.
Oh, my God.
You purist.
There's one other thing I want to give a shout out to, sort of. very recently, I would say in the last year or two, I bought the Ghostbusters soundtrack because I thought, man, I love this movie. I love the songs in this movie. And here's what I'm going to tell you. If you ever have a chance to sit down and listen to the Ghostbusters soundtrack, it's on Spotify. You will figure out that they picked the exact right parts of those songs to play.
It's basically like TikTok sounds before TikTok existed.
It truly was. Like, the reason why I wanted to buy it was because of the scene where all the ghosts are, like, flying everywhere, and it's like that song where it's like, magic, 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 magic. Like, that song's just like a straight up weird new wave song for 5 minutes before the very end where it like gets into like the weird breakdown that you remember. And like same with like when they're charging in to like fight Gozers at that bow bow boom boom da, ba, da, bow bow. Like, I think the song's literally called like Saving the Day.
You're trying to fight Bowser from Sha-na-na?
Bowser from Sha-na-na. Well, and of course, the one I always love to sing when they're going to the hotel, and it's, got a Ghostbusters cleaning up the town.
That's actually my favorite Ghostbusters specific theme. Fuck the other one. That is.
Man, guys,
the
why
best
have
one.
I not covered that but, yet? That's so ridiculous.
Yeah, by the bus boys, cleaning up the town, by the bus boys.
Holy shit. If you don't do like a thrash cover of that, Scott, I don't know what I'm going to do.
Kyle, and I'm telling you, you're wrong though, because
write it down.
As we discussed on Ghostbusters 2, the best ever Ghostbusters song is the Bobby Brown one where he raps about the plot of Ghostbusters 2.
Oh, that makes sense. If there's a song that can spark notes anything for me, I'll give it a shot.
That's why you love Men in Black so much by Will Smith. Wild Wild West.
That's right.
I really, I've said this before, I wish that never ended. I wish that every single Will Smith movie for the entirety of his career
had Will Smith rapping about the movie.
Got a rap song cliff notes.
Could you imagine Pursuit of Happiness?
All right. Well, Kyle, since you've been on more episodes than any other one of us, I think you should get to go first on the double feature on this one.
Oh my God. I'm going to give us a Sigourney Weaver double feature, and I want to watch Galaxy Quest. I
have that on my long list. Hell yeah, dude.
Galaxy Quest, I have a little storied history with it, but I think as a movie itself, beyond what I feel like I was able to like learn about it, I just think that, like, you know, Ghostbusters is not meta by any means, but it just works in the same world of like, you have to save the world from a thing that people don't believe exists. Even the people who are trying to save the world
don't
believe.
Necessarily.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, there's this sort of disconnect. Like, you know, Venkman never quite feels like he is fully 100% invested. He's invested in the money that it brings in, but never like the full, like, this is what's happening in the world until he has to save it. You know, Tim Allen's character is so much of that.
Yeah.
You know, it's a fun one. So that would be my double feature.
All right, Scott?
I'm going to go with Little Shop of Horrors just because I really can't have a better double. That's like the best night I could imagine. Well, I would start with Little Shop. You know, get all your sillies out, sing along, and then watch Ghostbusters. And then when they save New York City, you're just like,
all right. So Mayan is what I think is literally, I've heard my mom describe this as modern Ghostbusters when trying to pitch people on watching it in October. It's one of the only horror movies I know of that my mom loves, and it's one of my favorite horror films of all time. The Frighteners.
Yes!
With Michael J. Fox.
Yeah.
If you weren't going to say that one, I was going to be like, are you okay? I was going to do like a mental health check on you.
Well,
you call a wellness check live.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, if the audience wants to give me a mental health check in person, just a couple weeks from now, we're going to be at Creature Feature Weekend, April 19th to the 21st. In the meantime, if you want to get some of the new swag that we've got dropping at Creature Feature Weekend, you can always see if it's available on the website, hmnpodcast.com, or you can hit up our Patreon, patreon.com/hmnpodcast, just to get some extra content. We were talking about doing a soundtracking about The Crow. If you want to hear that, you got to go to the Patreon for it.
It's true.
And
those are long.
Those are very long.
Yeah.
And now the last part of our show. What did everybody watch? Kyle, anything that you've watched, listened to, read, etc.?
This is coming out after the Oscars, so who knows how this played in everybody else's. I watched Maestro. I had such a fun time. Like, I was... Okay. Maestro is a lot of things.
Yeah.
I thought it was a great movie. Loved it. I thought a lot of the visual strategy was really interesting. I thought the acting was great. I loved Cooper and Mulligan. Like, I thought everybody was great, right? And I think that the most interesting part of it to me is that it's sort of Bradley Cooper being able to... It doesn't matter that it is him specifically. It just matters that it's a person who is able to do the dream project that they wanted to do and take the time and the energy and whatever to do it apparently the way that he wanted to do it. You know what I mean? Like, it was just like he paid his dues. He worked his ass off. Like, he did all of these things. And it so apparently feels that he's like, this is my dream project and now I get to do it. It's like some people jump on their dream projects maybe too soon. Some people never get to them. It doesn't matter like how successful you are. It just gave that energy to me while I was watching it. I think it's great. I didn't know anything about, you know, Leonard Bernstein. Like, I don't know anything about his career. Like, I knew nothing. So I'm relying on this film to tell me shit I don't know. So, you know, there maybe it's not the most accurate. I don't know. I don't know if it's the most accurate, but I thought it was fantastic. I really, really enjoyed watching it. I don't know where it falls in line with anything else that came out this year. I'm still playing catch up, and I probably will be playing catch up even beyond the Oscars. Like, it's not a mad dash for me. it used to be, and I would sometimes like it to be, but I'm just realistically, I can't do it. but Maestro's great. Maestro's a lot of fun. It can be heavy. It's exciting. It's also like just wildly visual, and fun to watch. So
I'm going to jump off of that too, because I only have two of the best picture films left to watch. I don't know if I'm going to get to them in time, because we're recording this the weekend before the Oscars, basically. And the last two that I have to watch are both like 2.5 hour long foreign films about like serious tragedy. So not exactly the stuff I dive into.
Barbie and,
and Oppenheimer.
But what I did see was a movie that this year was a really great... Let me start with this. This was a really great year for the Oscars and the Golden Globes and everything else, but also a bummer of a year because, like, Barbenheimer was very real. And, like, that is basically... Those two movies are going to just keep cleaning up at these awards, which is a bummer because basically all the movies that were nominated that I've watched, I was like, damn, that was a really good movie. Maestro was maybe my least favorite, and even then I was still like, that's a 3 to 3.5 star movie in my eyes. Yeah. But what I did see this week, that while I don't think it's the best movie of 2023, it's definitely among my favorite films that I've watched in a while, was American Fiction, which is probably the one that I've heard the least amount of buzz about. And American Fiction is so funny. It's so brilliant in its satire. It has these dramatic moments that work. But the concept of American Fiction is it's very similar to things like The Hollywood Shuffle or Bamboozled. It's a film about how progressive white people still indirectly force black people into stereotypes. And in this particular case, you have a guy who's a writer who just writes books about like mythology and stuff that's important to him, and because he's black, they don't want to publish his books unless it captures the black experience better. So as a joke, he writes the most racially insensitive, offensive thing that he can think of, and it turns into a giant bidding war amongst all of the white publishers because they're like, this is showing people what's really happening in the streets, and he's like, but it's not. Like, and it just tackles it with such a smart, graceful way where it you have to see it. I saw it in a theater with 8 people as part of like Regal Cinemas does like all of the best picture films for $5. You can see like each movie, $5 per movie. So it's usually in the middle of the afternoon on a weekday. And I was like, oh, let me go see it. And the 8 of us had a great time at screening. But I mean, I was like, that's one of the ones that I'm going to watch again. Like Maestro, I don't think I'm ever going to revisit. But yeah. American Fiction, Poor Things were definitely like the movie. Barbie were definitely the Best Picture nominees that I'm like, oh, I'm going to rewatch this because it was lighthearted enough to be like rewatchable and fun and not like doom and gloom, which is what I'm expecting from Zone of Interest. That just sounds like the most punishing.
Zone of Interest and Anatomy of a Fall. Is that
yep? Zone of Interest and Anatomy of the Fall. That's I haven't seen
A to Z, baby.
Okay. Well, I'll take us home with a relatively short book review. I finished a book called Leech by, and I'm so sorry if I butcher their name, but Hyron Ennis, I believe, is their name. They're a writer from Portland, I want to say. It's a really cool book. It was a blind buy at Barnes & Noble. It was in the horror section, and I think I mentioned to you guys that the cover said that it was a cross between The Thing and The Alienist, and I was like,
yeah,
good enough for me. And for only being I think it was only a 300-page book, it was a really long read. It, like, 20 pages felt like 60. I think it was just a really densely written book. And it wasn't really a horror novel as much as kind of a sci-fi novel with some fantasy, like some post-apocalyptic fantasy and a little bit of body horror in it. But I thought it was really well written. I think the world building was super fun. I could have done without the last 20 pages because I just thought that the story could have ended before that. But because I think that the last 20 pages of the story for the writer were important because they wanted to show the emotional journey of the final characters. And for me, there was little to no action, and it felt like I'm learning something about it. So this author, it's first time novel publishing for Leech, and the last like four books that I've read have been first time authors as well. And I hate to say first time author because it somehow denigrates their skill level in their work, because I think that it implies that they are amateur or that they are unskilled. But really, what I mean is it's their first novel. Not to say that they haven't written probably for most of their adult lives. I mean, I was talking great things about The September House, and you would never know that was a first time writing, first time novel. This felt a little bit more like one because it felt like the trajectory of the story was a bit unlike what you would expect action wise. It was very introspective in the last 20 minutes or 20 pages, and that's a bit jolting for some people, including myself. I was like, is something else going to happen? Because I mean, I don't really need any of this character development because I felt like the characters were already at that point. So that said, it's very interesting to read a lot of books by first published works by people in a row, because as someone who wants to get back into writing myself, I am reading these works. I'm thinking, this is what I would do differently. These are things that I really appreciate. These are things that I don't really think work. And I'm finding that so many of these horror books that I'm coming across, these, like, you know, that are written in the last 3 years, say, a lot of them are either written exactly like a slasher movie with the same beats, or they're not written like a movie at all. And I think that there is something to be said about writing with three pieces, you know, like three acts.
Yeah.
And I think that the idea of kind of not even deconstructing that, because there are ways to deconstruct a story and still tell a good story like that. I feel like if you build the action and then have this third act or this second half of the third act that's kind of a protracted final scene, it puts a pall upon the story itself. And I found that a lot of these books are doing that. And I think it's just coincidence. You know, yeah. It's coincidental. Does not mean that I don't think that it's a good book. I think that Leech was a very good book. I think that September House was a very, very good book. It's just an interesting thing that I've noticed. So highly recommend reading Leech if you like sci-fi and a little bit of horror, because it's not really the horror book that I was expecting. It's a lot more like a sci-fi book with a lot of world building. So very interesting. Mm. It's a hard read though. So I'm glad that I worked my way through it.
All right. Nice. Cool. Well, guys, that's 450 episodes.
Boom.
Done. We just have to do 450 more, and then we're finally able to retire from doing this show.
So break these chains.
Yeah, so stay tuned for that. And in the meantime, we'll be back next week with even more Horror Movie Night.
Obsessed with things that happened before your time? Well, if you are, join me, the host of Before My Time, Gelsey Lori, to discuss the wonders of the yesteryears that we weren't around to enjoy ourselves. You can find us on all podcast platforms.
Soon you'll be swaying, so come on, sing along.
Hey, welcome to Unstable Topics, a fast-paced, jam-packed, unhinged bestie podcast filled with facts, reacts, and made-up games in between.
We're your hosts, Sarah
and Maggie,
and we're excited for you to join our best friend hangout, where we surprise one another with things we find interesting or hilarious just to see how the other will react.
Our friendship might be totally stable, but you never know what your bestie might throw your way to knock you off your game.
So come shake things up, learn something new, and laugh along with us. This is Unstable Topics.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.